Siren Radio. The new Siren Radio. 107.3.
I still quite like the old one, but never mind. It is the new Siren Radio, and of course it's the Midweek Drive live, and in the studio, a debutante studio co-presenter all the way from Bermuda. It's the wonderful, wonderful world of Yaz DeGroff. How are you, Yaz?
I'm all good, Alex. How are you?
Good. That's fine. I'm just realizing I was expecting a phone link to connect there, but we weren't working through that. Honestly, it's just been one of those days. Kathy Manso.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, tired. Very tired. But it's the Midweek Drive, so I have the energy for this.
That's important. William Coles in Edinburgh. How are you?
Tip-top. Thank you so much for asking.
Nice, this is very good. And Eloise Sheehan, currently hiding in her bat cave somewhere in the south of the country. How are you, Eloise?
I'm good, thank you. I'm also second in the tiredness.
That's all right then. We've also got Robin Pierce, of course, in Wales, ready to gear up all sorts of things and probably take part in the challenge with respect to the crossword challenge. So, and Jessica Burtis has just come in from Carolina, North Carolina to be precise. It's wondrous. On the show today, obviously, we'll be talking about the Newark Book Festival. We'll be talking about Adrian Tchaikovsky with Adrian Tchaikovsky. This is a substantial text. Would you like to speed read it, Yaz?
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I love about Bermudian people. They're always so optimistic. Eyes of the Void will be working through that process. And we'll also be talking to Professor Jason Whitaker, who's got a new book on William Blake coming out as well. We've got Ambière. Now, Ambière, Jessica, you may recall over the Jubilee celebrations, when the rest of the country was going crazy with all sorts of things, I was actually helping with a charity for blood disorders and so on, and then came back to connect with your good self to actually do a feature with Ambière from Manchester. You can tell that by the signed Ambière, and her latest single, Thea. Do you know why Ambière wasn't with us on Sunday, Jessica?
I do not. It was a mystery at the time.
She had a major outage when it came to the internet. She was devastated. Exactly. So we're giving her a second chance. So she is going to be joining us at 5:30 today, just after Harry Wallop, who's going to be talking about Days Out on a Budget. That's just in the first hour. I mean, it's just wondrous. But Kathy, I know you're keen to find out whether Bill Coles is up for the cutting of the mustard in terms of the crossword clue thing that you have failed to bring to the studio.
I have failed to bring us to the studio, but if you give me 1 minute and 30 seconds.
90
I can
seconds.
Definitely have something up here.
Whilst Kathy actually endeavours to actually get a crossword line using the internet, William, Boris Johnson, I mean, you're his official biographer in so many ways. I think I can apply this now. Official in inverted commas there. Do you think he's a bit like a zebra who's got a gammy leg, that it's only going to be a matter of time before the big beasts of the likes of, Priti Patel and the likes of Jeremy Hunt and the likes of maybe even William Rees-Mogg will be tearing him to shreds?
William Rees-Mogg, that was his father. No, your zebra analogy is not really right. A zebra with a gammy leg? No, he is in fact a greased pig or a slippery eel. Oh. He is as cunning as a weasel. He is not dead by any means. I mean, it's not for a long time. I think the only way he's going out is when he loses a general election.
Do you think he's going to lose a general election? I don't know.
There's no other way they're going to get him out.
So a bit like an over-eager, excited poodle when they clamp themselves to your leg and you have to literally peel them off and then thrust them to one side. That's the sort of difficult metaphor that you're putting forward for British politics and the world today.
Yes, that's a very good one. I think I'll use that one. Yes, have you actually had this experience with the
I have
before?
Actually, yes. It's something that certainly left an indelible mark on my undergraduate days. But bless her, Mrs. Dunning, the landlady, said, he's just showing he likes you, dear. Yeah, okay. So There are other ways, okay? That's all I'm saying. There are other ways of showing you like another species than clamping themselves. And you know, just don't go there. Kathy, have you managed to solve a clue as yet? Or have you got a clue for William to address?
I do have a clue. I hope you enjoy. I looked at what would be the most difficult one for me to solve. And this one, I look at it and I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So it's a question. Doth choose a comedy routine? And it's 12 letters.
Would you like to run this by us one more
time? Yeah, sure. So it's this is the New York Times crossword puzzle,
yes.
First of all. It's a medium puzzle, so it's not the hardest because it's a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And the question is, doth choose a comedy routine?
Doth, as in D-O-T-H.
Yes, as in D-O-T-H.
So doth, really, if we're doing Shakespeare in English.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Doth.
I think it's my accent.
I mean, in New York, they still refer to London as Londonium. You know, it's important.
Yeah,
it's
an
old Batman series. So doth choose a comedy routine.
Yes.
And choose as in C-H-O-O-S-E?
Yeah.
Oh, William, doth choose a comedy routine, sirrah?
Sort of like it's an old style kind of jester, isn't it? It's sort of Harlequin.
Harlequin?
Is that 12?
No, nowhere near that. I'm thinking medieval.
Yeah. Robin, any sort of advance on Harlequin for yourself in terms of doth choose a comedy routine? Prithee.
It's an old way of picking something, isn't it? I think. I don't know.
Doth choose a comedy routine.
Yeah.
It's routine.
I'm not sure, Yaz, whether this form of English might have crossed over to Bermuda. But then again, Sean Gota is a wonderful person, so not that he chose comedy routines. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, you know, I have absolutely no clue.
That's what we like, honesty.
I do have an easier clue.
All right.
The author of The Letter from Birmingham Jail.
The author of The Letter from Birmingham Jail.
In brief, three letters.
Jessica's probably trying to burst in with an answer here. Jessica, any thoughts?
Wait, it's only three letters?
It's brief.
MLK?
MLK?
Is that it?
Not happy with this. I mean, I think
you're right. I think, hold on, let's give it a shot. Hold on.
Okay, well, there we are. Meanwhile, Eloise Sheehan, I mean.
I'm getting a yes. It's MLK.
Well, there we are.
What is MLK?
Martin Luther King.
Yeah, Martin Luther King.
Oh, right, okay.
Wow,
well,
the clue.
When you said Birmingham, I didn't think Birmingham, Alabama.
Wow.
I went to Birmingham.
I mean, that's fair. That's why I thought it would be my time to finally come up with an American clue. Yeah. Thanks, Jessica.
Once again, Midweek Drive spans the globe in terms of cultural difficulties. If only the two Vladimirs would get together on the Midweek Drive, we'd be able to sort it out. It's important, I'm just saying. So, doth choose a comedy routine?
I still have no idea. This is the hardest one, I think.
And it's in the New York Times.
It's in the New York Times, and it's a Wednesday. And there's a question mark at the end, and it's 12 letters.
Yeah.
Could be a phrase.
I'd rather look on Google. They don't even know either.
No. Well done, Eloise, for actually keeping your camera off and actually checking what everybody else looks like, basically. It's important. That's the case. Okay, in a matter of hours, we're going to be releasing Pink Flamingos to the world. Pamela Sue Mann's number, Pink Flamingos, is going to come up to the world, etc. William Coles, are you ready to cast your critical ear over Pink Flamingos?
Hit me with the Pink Flamingos.
Ghost would simply turn around and say, enjoy Pamela Sue Mann and Philip Hurdwood singing Pink Flamingos.
Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the Let's dance like pink flamingos do. And I will dance like me. And you will dance like you.
Okay, so looking at the comments already, BBC Ulster, straight from the Lena Lovitch School of Bizarre. MTV, ethereal art pop. Classic Rock magazine, there's a seductive quality to man's diaphanous signature vocal and otherworldly sound palette. Arty, avant, ambient, and alt-pop joy. Laurie Anderson, what a masterpiece. A certain chap there who you might like to quote from the point of view of quotes about Pink Flamingos, though I don't know, Kathy, if you can actually make that out there. The guy who actually says, quirky, charming, and musically effervescent. Yes, you're nodding, which works very well on radio.
Quirky, fun, yes, yeah, yes, I can read.
Dance like Pink Flamingos, a Charleston for the 21st century. That was my quote. I'm sorry, I'm just saying that. William Coles, what did you make of Pink Flamingos?
I thought it was fantastic. That guy has got a hell of a voice. I mean, if you've got a voice like that, I'm not surprised he goes to the little solo bit at the end. It's amazing. Mm. Mm-hmm.
He did the jingle for yourself and Robin Pierce in times past, of course. That's Philip Hurdwood. So I think he's reached a whole new world. The video itself is particularly extraordinary. Yaz, your first time hearing Pink Flamingos, I believe.
It sure is, and I am very interested. I liked it. Something that I would definitely listen to on like a good Friday morning, get me in the jam.
Unique, innovative, playful and optimistic, the track has a happy-go-lucky feel and expresses a pure joyousness, both musically and in Pamela's quirky vocal delivery. Jessica Burtis, you always refer to Pamela as Miss Pamela. It's like a Southern thing, I know. So what are your thoughts on Miss Pamela's latest musical offering, released on the 10th of July? June?
It was so worth the wait. It was so ethereal and beautiful. It was so great getting to hear, you know, both of their voices. I loved how they contrasted with each other. It was gorgeous.
Written as a joyous contrast to the sorrow caused by the current world climate. Why? The Midweek Drive Live's been back for a long time now. Mann describes Pink Flamingos as, the song was written as a welcome burst of sunshine in these dark times and is guaranteed to make you smile or even dance. Eloise Sheehan, what are your thoughts on Pink Flamingos?
Yeah, it was really different. I need to know more about the video now, though.
Oh, once you've seen the video, honestly, the shirt needs a warning, is all I say. The shirt that is worn by Philip Hurdwood, it needs a caveat. You really should be wearing sunglasses. It shouldn't be allowed, not in a New York delicatessen, in any way, shape, or form. Kathy.
Yes, hello, hi. I loved it, obviously, but I love everything that Pamela Suman does, so that's not too hard, it's not a reach. I have questions, though, because I have a theory that we were side contributing to the inspiration of Pink Flamingos, because she's brought her Pink Flamingos onto the Midweek Drive multiple times.
Indeed.
We've named them, even.
We did indeed.
So Jessica was there. She knows. I think Robin's been a part of that. I need to ask her. I got to find out next time I see her. Hey. Where'd this idea come from? Just let us know.
It's sublimating the horror reality of a pandemic into the divine, delirious hopefulness of humanity, starting with a dance. Where better or more appropriate to dress up in a wacky flamingo pattern suit than a supermarket? Never done it myself. Maybe Robin Pierce has. Robin.
Well, if I have, I sure wouldn't be admitting to it on this show.
Okay. Why not on this show?
That's an amazing song, though. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was playful. To me, it sounded, oddly enough, like Lena Lovitch, which I remember. It was like Lena Lovitch meets Kate Bush in the best possible way. And that was really Phil Hurdwood providing the male vocals. Mm. I am astounded.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show when you actually got guitar and synth from Jerry Leonard, famed for his work with David Bowie. The track also featuring vocal performances from Trina Hamilton and Donna Lewis as well. It's Phil Hurdwood who again gets the nod in that direction. So, William, any questions you'd like to put to Yaz, who, as I say, has been a regular via Zoom, but this is the first time she's actually been live in the studio in her entire time as an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln. She'll soon be a postgraduate with a wonderful degree in communications and public relations to her name.
Yes. Hi, Yaz. How's it going?
I'm all good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm very good shape, thank you. Now, today I have been planting up my favorite flower, which is Lily of the Valley, which has an amazing smell. And I bought a whole load of bulbs online. So what is your favorite flower and why?
That's hard. I think so many flowers have their own. They're just so unique. They kind of remind me of people. But I'm going to have to go with the Bermudiana, since I am Bermudian. It's a very small purple flower. And they're kind of rare. You see them occasionally, especially during the summer. And they're very nice. Nice to look at. A nice vibrant.
Do they grow in the UK at all? I've never heard of this flower.
I've never seen them in the UK.
Wow. Okay, we need to see this at the Chelsea Flower Show. One more thing about Bermuda. I mean, there's only one thing that us codgers, middle-aged codgers, know about Bermuda, and that is the triangle. Do people still talk about it or not?
As in the locals, we don't really talk about it. But, of course, anyone that is not from Bermuda or has been to Bermuda would ask the question. So, yes.
It's sad, really, that William should fall into that cliched trap. I mean, he's normally very innovative. He doesn't normally do the cliches. I mean, William, is there something about Bermuda? Is that a reason you've never visited Bermuda before because you've been afraid of the triangle?
I've never had the pleasure. It just hasn't been on my beat so far, but I'm looking forward to going. Yeah.
So yes, given that the weather in Lincoln is pretty much all year round, just like Bermuda, what rationale would you actually give William Coles for actually getting on that plane, if he can find a jet with fuel and such like, and getting his way to Bermuda?
I think you should take it. You should go over. Definitely.
What's
the definite change for weather. Pardon?
What is the highlight of Bermuda?
I would say the number one highlight would be, I'm going to have to say the beach. Mm. You know, at home there's, we have a pink beach. So, you know, you can go sit off at the pink beach. And what's
and
so great about it.
And join the pink flamingos.
And join the pink flamingos.
On the pink beach.
On the pink beach. You know, why not?
With the pink ladies.
With the pink ladies. Okay. That's definitely what inland, I would say is a good attraction.
Okay. Inland, what have we got? What's the best thing outside, away from the beach?
I would say away from the beach. Well, technically, Bermuda is so small that it doesn't matter where you are. You're going to see water. So,
just like Lincoln.
Just like Lincoln. So, technically, looking inwards, I would say the best thing that you're going to get is probably the culture. Summer is coming up. We have Carnival. We have a three-day holiday. We just had Bermuda Day the other day. And it's just a whole lot of partying, sun, celebration. And it's something great to be a part of, to see.
And for any Bermuda listeners, happy Bermuda Day. Very important. Time zone is probably going to be about early morning now, isn't it, in Bermuda? I would have thought in that sort of ways.
It's going to be about midday, yeah.
Yeah, it will. Fantastic. Kathy, would you like to throw those last two questions at William Coles, please?
Of course. All right, my first question, as it always is on this show, is have you had a reasonably good Zoomer with us today?
It's been more than reasonably good. It's been great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we love having you. I mean, I'm going to speak for the team, but we love. And the second question, will you be joining us again?
Yes, please. Thank you so much.
Up very shortly, Harry Wallop, days out on a budget. If you can't afford to go to Bermuda, there are other alternatives around. And with Travel Zoo, we'll release them. All after The Motive and then Jericho. And then Ambier. And then.
Oh,
It's the Bramham International Horse Trials. We've got a Lincolnshire show coming up. We've got a Yorkshire show after that. But can we afford to do them? Can we indeed afford to travel these days with the cost of living crisis that's actually impacting us and which we can't really get away from in so many ways? 75% of British folk are having less disposable income now compared to before the pandemic and are having to make cutbacks. So how can we address this? How can we actually find the best way to enjoy a great day out on a budget? Well, we've not just got one, but two fabulous souls to actually talk about this. It's a hearty welcome back to the Midweek Drive for consumer expert extraordinaire Harry Wallop. How are you, Harry?
I'm very well, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. And we've got the amazingly talented soul from Travel Zoo, Kat Jordan, with us. How are you, Kat?
Hi, Alex. I'm good. Thank you.
Excellent. Harry, if I can turn to you first, I mean, it's inevitable that people are going to be faced with the ongoing narrative about fuel costs going through the roof, rail strikes, the onset of a potential summer and maybe winter of discontent, fuel bills in the winter, hikes of all sorts of things. Isn't it understandable that many of us just want to go home and just hide in a cave and just say we just don't want to go anywhere?
Well, I think, yes, in normal circumstances, that would be absolutely true. But the problem is we spent the last 2 years in a cave. And what's fascinating is that people are determined this summer to have some time away from work with their family, be it, you know, a 2 week break in Europe or maybe just a weekend away. And there were some figures out from one of the credit card companies this week that amazingly showed that travel spending had gone up by 190% compared with last year. Now, that figure's slightly flattered by the fact that we were coming out of lockdowns this time last year. But nonetheless, there's a real sense from people in the industry that people are determined to have some time away, take a break, even have a bit of a splurge. And you know, this survey from Travel Zoo that's come out today shows that, you know, well over 8 out of 10 people prefer sort of experiences building time away with their family than material things. So I think if people are going to cut back, it's probably, at least not this year, it's not going to be on a break. So it's really interesting. People do want to go away.
I mean, Kat, it's extraordinary. Over the last week or so, we've had the usual pundits who've been coming out saying, well, it's a perhaps difficult jet and we don't care air and various other sort of puns for that point of view. And why would you want to actually prepare to actually have a holiday when you just want to spend the several days sleeping on the floor of an aircraft lounge, etc.? There's obviously a lot of uncertainty about getting that right bargain. I mean, how can we begin to navigate our way through what to the uninitiated might seem like to be a minefield of problems in addition to the costs?
Yeah, and it can feel a little bit like that. But I think all of us in the industry are super optimistic that this is the year that everybody gets to do that traveling that they haven't been able to do for the last couple of years. And I don't know anybody that hasn't booked a summer holiday and isn't excited about it. But there are also lots of days out locally to be had, lots of UK hotels that, you know, that are standing empty because everyone's going abroad. So there are some serious bargains to be had, even for those people who are maybe a little bit still fearful of you know, braving the airports at this point.
I mean, this is yourself again. We spoke about the staycation, of course, and the heyday of the staycation. And clearly during the pandemic, that was very much an attractive option. These days, of course, again, going back to cost, you might think, can we afford to drive the family car from, I don't know, Lincoln to Edinburgh? Or is it a case of we prefer to buy Chelsea Football Club just to save the fuel?
Well, yeah, no, fuel is, I mean, gosh, I've noticed it. My car is now more than £100. To fill up, but there are deals to be had on trains, for instance. Yes, you might have to negotiate a train strike, but it's worth pointing out that things like National Rail, that you get a 2-for-1 entry on tons. Book a National Rail ticket, off-peak travel ticket, and then you get 2-for-1 entry in tons, absolutely tons, hundreds of different attractions all over the UK. And they are, you know, they're good ones. Sea Life, Hunstanton, Warwick Castle, Cadbury World, those sort of places. And so if you've got kids, that is quite a good way of saving money. Also gives you actually also unlimited travel for the day if it's a day ticket around London. So if you're doing a day trip to London, that saves significant costs. So there are ways, there are definitely tricks and tips to get around the fact that most things in your life are getting more expensive. You can enjoy a day out without it being any more expensive than it was a couple of years ago.
is the key element, Kat, to actually plan ahead? Is it a case of ensure that you really should, from today, if you're thinking about days out in August, for instance, you should make those initial plans, certainly if you're heading in the sort of local English countryside and so on?
Yes, I think planning ahead always bags you a bargain, but not necessarily. And equally, the 2-for-1 rail offers that Harry's talking about, it's always good to get in and get those planned as well, because there's often sort of limited availability on some of those. But I think all of these things, there are bargains to be had. There are always bargains to be had. And there's lots of examples locally to your listeners that they can look into, and they can get great days out and great hotels away very, very easily. It's just a question of knowing where to go to find those and to shop around a bit.
91% of us have said that holidays improve their mental health and well-being. I mean, Harry, this seems to be fairly self-evident. But how is that circle being squared? I mean, through obviously features like this, in which people can hopefully sort of be alerted to some of the bargains that are actually out there. Is it a case of you need to be a little bit more shrewder in terms of the deals and things you would have normally actually said, oh, what the hey, we'll just go for this one?
Yeah, completely. And I think it's that real mixture of planning well ahead. So, I mean, most of the well-known theme parks, zoos and stuff, is always cheaper to book online the day before than buying tickets on the gate. That's usually astronomically expensive. You know, being occasionally a little bit scrimpy and savvy, bring your own food and drink, because, again, a lot of these attractions make a lot of their margin, their profit margin, from selling overpriced fizzy drinks and overpriced soggy sandwiches. Bring your own. That, you know, is a huge saving. And then there's all sorts of things like, think about, Kat and I were discussing, you know, go with a group of friends and you can get a group ticket. Often if you go with 10 people, I've got, you know, 4 kids, so that's already, we're 6 of us, go with another family, and then suddenly you're entitled to a group booking and you can often get 30% off. So there are all sorts of other ways to just keep those costs down. I mean, if you've got, for instance, a Tesco Club card, which millions and millions of people do, you can trade in your Tesco Club card points for money off at a lot of these big attractions, and they're worth far more when you go, for instance, to Legoland, trade them in for Legoland, than if you trade them in for groceries at the supermarket. So it's just keeping an eye out, really, shopping around, signing up to a lot of these deal sites that will alert you when there's a last minute deal. So a mixture between planning ahead and then being a little bit flexible. And suddenly there's a great bargain. You know what? That's really cheap. Let's go away next weekend rather than in a couple of weeks time.
And clearly there are still lots of events that are taking place. I mean, we mentioned a couple of the start of the piece. We've also got the Newark Book Festival in July, 7th to the 10th of July. There's lots of things that are happening. So, you know, is it also a case of just do your surveys through the internet, find out what sort of things are interesting and interested in the family, and sort of make a decision to actually go and just say the heck with it. We need to actually generate this memory.
And I think the memory part of it is the key thing here. So many people remember that day out, particularly when you're with the family and the kids talk about it for years to come. So sometimes actually that's the most dominant feeling for people, as opposed to how much it cost. But getting out there and having those experiences is key. And like you said, there's a huge number of events, lots of concerts, food festivals. We've got gin festivals, concerts by candlelight. I think in the Lincoln Cathedral, things like that people can get out and really enjoy that will stay with them forever.
And where, Kat, can people actually go to find out more details about Travel Zoo?
Well, funny you should ask me that, Alex, but it's travelzoo.com, and you can sign up to be a Travel Zoo member for free, and then you'll receive our top 20 newsletter, which is the best of the best deals, each Wednesday at 11 o'clock. And it's something to really look out for, because it's where you really do spot the best deals for the rest of the year.
Well, we obviously need to wrap up with two consumer-based questions as far as the midweek drive are concerned. I think, Harry, you might just recall what they are. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been fantastic. Thank you very much, Alex.
Excellent. And Kat, has it also passed the Travel Zoo seal of approval?
It certainly has, Alex. Thank you.
In which case, can we look forward to welcoming you both back in the not-too-distant future and keeping us appraised of good bargains to be had for holiday memories and more. Will you both return?
Gladly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harry Wallop and Kat Jordan from Travel Zoo, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and happy holidays.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Alex.
Yes, thank you. Jessica Bertus, exciting times now, because thankfully the internet outage that was a problem on Sunday, I think, has been solved in the joys of Manchester. And we can formally welcome to the Midweek Drive live the awesomely talented songstress, Ambier. How are you, Ambier?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good to connect with your good self, Ambier. Good to see you. Although you can't see me, but I'm hiding behind the whole system here. All right. We've also got, from, of course, Gloucestershire, our official Gloucestershire correspondent. That's the fabulous Hannah O'Brien. How are you, Hannah?
Hi, Alex. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. And obviously, last week, Cathy Manso sitting there. Apparently, she was literally just one floor above us. She thought when we were having coffee, oh, they mustn't be doing the show now. And so that's the reason she didn't turn up in the studio. Honestly, these Americans, eh?
It just hurts. It just hurts. Why? I didn't mean it. No one was here. You guys are timely.
Yeah, we were having a coffee elsewhere. We're all sorting that. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Jessica, before we have another listen to the fabulous track that has been brought to the public by Ambier, it's called Thea. Have you got any questions you want to put to Ambier before we actually open this up for the general team to consider and contemplate?
Yes, I think one of the biggest questions I had was, well, first, your song is absolutely gorgeous. But first, I was wondering how you came up with the title Thea. Where did that name come from for you?
Do you know, really, it's not actually as deep as it sounds, because when you look at it, it does sound like the goddess. But it was just a person that we met on a night out, and they were called Thea. And I loved that name. I was like, oh, I've never met Thea. And then they were like, no, name it Thea, and that was it.
You see, I was thinking it might have been Green Arrow's nephew or niece or sister. I don't know. It's Oliver Queen's sort of connection. Thea is there. It's the Arrow series. Clearly not. Ambier, I have to ask you, I kind of put this sort of in the ether on Saturday. Made in Manchester and MCFC's City Square Stage. Is that Manchester City FC?
Yeah, Manchester City.
Are you City or United?
I am... kind of be Sweden in this one, but I'd have to be Manchester United because
such a pity, actually. That's such a pity she didn't choose City, basically. Never mind. Obviously, we have occasional deluded souls from Old Trafford who might cross over. It's all right. It's not going to impact on the piece itself. It's just a minor point there. It's going so well.
No, I'll never be allowed back now. Well, I'll be it.
Yeah, you take the Swedish or indeed the Sven-Göran Eriksson approach, of course, who was manager of Manchester City back in the days before we actually had a finance to actually cope with. But anyway, it's by the by. Don't worry, Ambier, you are only 30-odd points behind us as far as the league season was concerned, so it's all good. We're not here to talk about football. We're here to talk about your awesome music. Robin Pierce, are you ready to listen to Thea by Ambier?
Well, I've got the arms of my seat up. I'm belted in. Hit me with it.
Eloise, are you ready to actually listen to Thea?
I don't normally listen to modern music, but I'm totally ready for this.
Yeah. It has to be pointed out, Ambier, Eloise, normally anything that's newer than Gene Pitney or indeed any of the genes in many ways. I was thinking of the dancing Gene there for a moment. The guy from the Singing in the Rain, that Gene.
Gene Kelly?
Gene Kelly,
there
exactly.
We go.
It's not, it's, you know, we could get that. Could have been Gene Pitney, of course. Hannah, are you ready for Thea?
Absolutely.
And in the studio, Yaz, are you set for this extraordinary vocal connection with sweeping strings, filtered loops, and a knotted bass riff to keep listeners locked in?
I sure am.
Kathy, is it a go for you?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say a curse word, right, to show my excitement, but then I remembered we're on radio.
Live radio.
So let's bring it back a little bit. But yeah, the excitement is there.
It's just very true. Stay with us, Ambier. We're going to be with you again after. Well, go on, introduce yourself singing Thea, please. Take it away, Ambier.
Hello, I'm Ambier, and this is my new single, Thea. Do what you want to do, oh, my mind.
Not mess around. Yaz de Graaf, what did you make of Thea?
I think it was great. I love, we're here in the studio watching the video and the music video, and I absolutely love the music video. And I think it's just great and beautiful, to be honest.
I know that you feel the same, carrying love, carrying light, carrying pain. It's like a Manchester United supporter. Sorry, Ambier, but you know, get the occasional gig in there. Let's go to Kathy.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to hear this song over and over again on repeat. This is going to be my new pregame song. This is going to be, well, I'm hoping I can hear this when I'm out dancing, because this is going to be the song where if I'm in the best mood, it's like, yes, I feel it. Here's happening. But if anything happens, like a breakup occurs over the summer, I'm going to cry with this song at the same time, because it's like, the pain. So I just feel like it's going to be, it's a good one because it hits the emotions. I also wrote a note saying like, my note was better than Ellie Goulding, so in my
Ellie
opinion.
Who? I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not
Ellie
in
who?
Ambience
no,
class.
Not,
you know,
not even.
Exactly. Good sakes.
So you already have a new fan, so yeah, I'm signed up.
Hannah O'Brien, have you signed up to Ambier's Ambiance?
Spotify playlist while we were listening to it, to be honest. Your vocals are absolutely haunting, Ambier. Your voice reminds me a bit of Florence from Florence and the Machine, but haunting vocals, bit of a beat there. Yeah, definitely, I can imagine that doing very well.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Eloise Sheehan, an interesting line, or would you say no? I prefer Gene Kelly's version. He hasn't done Thea as yet.
I actually really enjoyed that. It's strange for me that when you hear someone talk, such as hearing you talk before, you can't quite tell what the vocals are going to be like when someone sings, but no, that would be fantastic.
And Jessica, does it still cut the mustard from yourself in North Carolina?
Of course, the song is beautiful. It sounds like it's like, you know, a dream and like neon lights, and the video, everyone should watch the video because the music video matches it so perfectly. It's absolutely wonderful.
We were having debate, Ambia, about the insect that is seen crawling around. Is that a bumblebee? What sort of insect is that? And how much did the insect actually charge to actually make that cameo appearance in the video?
He had a
for work? And she was like, we'll do it for free as long as my face is everywhere. So, yeah, she did it for free, this one.
Wow. Wow, yeah, free insects. Strange world,
isn't it? 2022.
But, you know, all of our comments may be trashed now by our Welsh correspondent, and who knows where he's going to go. Robin Pearce, the curmudgeonly one, the Simon Cowell of the Midweek Drive. What are your thoughts on Thea?
Simon Cowell, how dare you? Good grief. You know, yeah, I might be old and my tastes might be old-fashioned. For example, it's no secret that my favourite female vocalist of all time is Stevie Nicks. And listening to this, it reminds me a lot of the style of Stevie Nicks in the Rumours era in the late 70s. You know, before she smoked 180 a day and her voice broke. And it's got a pleasantly easygoing techno backing. It was like a fusion of two styles, and I think it worked really, really well.
Yay. It's a full round of applause for Ambia and Thea. Yay! So there we are, Ambia. It was worth getting the broadband fix just for that, really.
And oh, honestly, I thought I was going to be banned from all radio stations.
No. You are a top sort. Okay, let's have a questions, Kathy, that you'd like to put to Ambia.
Yeah, I wanted to know, because we were watching the music video, where is this all happening? Can I visit these places? Where? What's the location?
Absolutely. I think it's pretty much just filmed in Manchester. My friend, Stefano, at Deepest, he is Greek and Italian. So some of the shots where you see the sea, he was actually in Greece at the time, because I didn't really have time to fly on holiday and get some nice beach shots. So he just like used them, and the rest of them were just places in Manchester, like a rooftop. I can't really think where the ones were. It was just me on my phone and
Putting magic together. Yes. Any thoughts or questions from yourself?
Yes, I absolutely loved it. I felt like the connection between the raw footage that you were taking with your phone absolutely fitted the raw emotions with the music that you were producing. And I just thought that connection was so nice to see. And the aesthetic, I absolutely loved it. I plan on going to Manchester, and I'm glad you've kind of opened my eyes into kind of the lifestyle that I like, the aesthetics that I like about Manchester. So I absolutely enjoyed that.
I really wanted to just put across with it, you know, like just go there. Do you want the Tumblr? I mean,
You've got the Fab Cafe, you've got the Etihad Stadium, you've got all sorts of other wonderful things that you can actually check out in that sort of system. And it's a great place. You've got also the birthplace of Oasis as well, which is very important. Robin, questions from yourself?
Yeah, I got two questions. Number one, do you actually know who Stevie Nicks is? And number two, did I hear you right? You actually made a music video on your phone, because that gets you immense props and kudos from me.
Well, I know who Stevie Nicks is. She's a queen. Love her. And the music video was made so Steph had like his film camera, and then some of the shots I would take on my iPhone. And then we'd just like spend Friday evenings together, just putting them all together. When he did the editing for the music video.
Yeah, you're losing us. We're losing you slightly, Ambia, but don't worry. I think we're getting the gist of the whole thing. If all else fails, we can always go to Semaphore or subtitles. Hannah O'Brien, a bit further west than Manchester. I suppose Gloucestershire, Manchester. But again, any questions for yourself?
Absolutely. Ambia, what is your inspiration for writing songs? Do you have kind of a lightning bolt moment, or does it take a longer time for you to come up with your ideas?
I think writing music is the easiest part for me out of everything. I've got about 1,000 voice notes on my phone where I'll just come up with a melody and it'll instantly just come into my head. I think Thea was written in about maybe like half an hour. Just sat
1,800 seconds. 1,800 seconds to put that together. I dare ask how long it took Sparkly Marmalade to be produced, but that was for a Sunday show, which was very good. Sparkly Marmalade. Personal favourite of Jessica's, because of obviously her love and fondness for sweet tea. Jessica, any further questions you want to put to Ambier?
Yeah, I'd love to know what your plans are this summer for your music.
My plans are getting a new single out, hopefully just reaching as many people as I possibly can, and I'd love to travel with music, just going to different places, doing gigs in different places.
Thea would go down very well in Ibiza, I think. Thea in Ibiza. It's just a thought. It would work on that. Eloise Sheehan, whilst you're looking after a young child, 4 months old and driving around a Batmobile, any questions from yourself?
I was just wondering, what are you planning on doing next?
Next is just carrying on writing. I think I'm going to go to Wales for a couple of days with my friend. And
Steady. You don't want to go too much, or going to Wales. I mean, Lord knows, you know. Crossing that boundary. Never mind. No, don't worry. Yeah. Wales is good and full of lovely jam-packed dragons and such like stuff, but it's good material.
I wish you could see Robin, because he's just nodding left and righting his head. He's like, absolutely.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. It's all part of the whole thing. How can people follow you, Ambier? Are you on all the socials? And have you, this is a question I know Yaz is desperately keen to ask, have you got a TikTok account as yet?
I have a TikTok account. I'm the worst person on TikTok. I cannot do it. I've tried.
Me too.
So you probably do rubbish videos on there. But that's just under, and I can't speak, under Ambier Official. My Instagram's Ambier Official. Just Ambier. Yeah, if you type it in, you'll find it on there.
Good. It was Yaz actually who introduced me to TikTok 2.5 years ago. Then we had a pandemic. I don't think the two were connected, but never mind. As a last word, I worked through. She put the whole process across there. Okay, let's go to Hannah. Would you like to put one of the last two questions to Ambier, please?
Ambier, have you enjoyed your time with us on this Zoom call tonight?
I have absolutely loved it. I was so nervous because I thought this for the third time, like the speaker better work. So yeah, I was a bit nervous. I was thought never going to see me again. But no, I'm really grateful. I've really appreciated it. So thank you so much for having me.
It was all part of the strategy to ensure she actually got another bite at the midweek drive. She wanted to listen to what Jessica and myself were talking about the whole thing and said, shall I do it? Shall I not do it? I know these Manchester United supporters of old. They strategically think about these things and then they go there. Honestly, you should consider switching your allegiance. I'm just saying, think of Carlos Tevez. Welcome to Manchester. It was when he actually joined City. I'm just saying, it's a minor point. And the next question is going to be, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future? Will you be kind enough to return?
Anytime, let me know. I will be here. The internet will be working. I'm ready. Whenever you want.
This is a round of applause for Ambier, please. Fantastic stuff there. And from Ambier, we'll go back in time to a songstress who actually had this featured when she was playing the role of Pussycat on Batman.
Blowing in the time for-
course, you can look forward to reviewing Leslie Gore's performance in an episode of Resonance Rewind, Jessica and Kathy, in the not-too-distant future, because it's the Catwoman episode. Very good.
Jumping into that.
Yeah, I hope so. A bit like a pussycat, which is great stuff. Okay, we thank Hannah O'Brien. She's headed off now to do all manner of wonderful things there. In the words of John Cafferkey from, indeed, the University of Lincoln, good old Hannah, what's she doing now? We'll find out various other things. If you're wondering where Gabriella Peralta is, which you may be if you're looking ahead to some of the previous notions, she's been following the Wessexes around. That's Sophie and Edward in Gibraltar. So she's coming up from that point of view. And we will be waiting. Adrian Tchaikovsky, award-winning sci-fi and fantasy author, will be looking ahead to his appearance in the 2022 Newark Book Festival. Because, obviously, we're using Zoom, etc., I'll pass this over to Yaz now. You might like to wave it at the camera. That's the Eyes of the Void edition of Adrian Tchaikovsky, part two of the trilogy that works through all manner of wonderful things, and we'll be talking about that hopefully with Adrian in the very near future, as well as finding out what delights Professor Jason Whittaker has actually put together with his latest book on William Blake. Kathy, you've got Eloise. I don't think you've ever connected with Eloise before, have you?
I think one time before, maybe a few weeks ago.
Right.
Well, Eloise, do you remember me? I don't know.
Who could never forget the Kathy Mansos of the world, etc. Anyway, we've also got Yaz in there as well. Would you like to throw a couple of questions at either Eloise, Jessica, or indeed Robin about, well, anything basically? I mean, we still haven't solved that crossword clue, have we, really?
Actually, I did. I found it, but I don't understand it. I don't understand. So if anyone can explain why the answer is this.
So the clue once again was...
Okay, so to go back to the clue, it was... Doth choose a comedy routine?
And Robin sadly let us down on this one. I know, it's tough, but still, never mind. Eloise said, don't be silly, I'm looking after a child. Not Robin, it's important. Jessica, bemused, I think. But she did get the Martin Luther King one, which was very important, given the American connection. What is the response?
So the answer is, and I think they're trying to talk. I'm not too sure because I keep seeing like they're...
Well, they're trying to... I'll open up the microphone then. They can talk now and we can actually hear them. You know, I kind of deliberately
sorry,
was talking
Eloise.
Over them there. But yeah.
I saw your box flash.
Yeah. And when you see Ella... No, I won't go there. It's just not appropriate in any way, shape or form. So we'll move on to your response. And what was the response to this?
Okay, so the answer that I found online, because we cheated, and I don't think I was ever going to come up with this answer, so if someone can explain the answer to me, that would be great. It's Pickett with the TH, so double TH, lines, Pickett lines.
Picketh lines.
Yeah, picket and then the TH and then lines. Picket lines.
I think the New York Times has gone off on a whole variety of strings. They've probably been affected by the architects. Speaking of the architect of course, the awesome, wonderful world of space opera extraordinaire. He's award-winning for Children of Time and much more, is now online and with us. And we say, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Live, Adrian Tchaikovsky. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much. I am very well.
Delighted to connect with your good self. Yaz, would you like to just pass the tome back across to me once again? It's good for exercise in all sorts of ways, etc. And Adrian, would you like to give me a number between 1 and 484, please?
317.
That was very specific.
Right, we know with Adrian, he's always spot on with respect to that. So 317, we'll actually just go through a little excerpt from this. Kit was keeping them just ahead of the sunship's gravitic reach, as if they were a cork on turbulent waters, knocked further away each time a hand grasped for it. Solace reckons this was mostly because the sunship was still orienting itself after its return to the real. We need to leave, she decided. Ollie, can we get into unspace? Planets fair enough, but they're right on us and they're shipping a lot of mass, Ollie got out. Vulture God, the Mary broke in. We'll run interference. Commencing assault now. Get out, compris? Compris, mother. Solace agreed automatically, but right now Ollie wasn't going to pick her up on it. Unless the sun ship turned out to be some glorified diplomatic barge, the Mary wasn't going to be able to go toe-to-toe with it for very long. The Vulture God was under control now, bracketer drive dragging it back and forth as it fled an erratic course away from the sun ship. Solace tracked the little Parthani interceptor as it set a course that would clip between the two vessels, its accelerator banks and gravity hammer already tracking. Comes from... Says it's the almighty scythe of morning, Chris said. Damn me. Says we agreed to an audience? A little excerpt there, a randomly chosen excerpt from an awesome text, Adrian, and one that opened up a horror interesting. I've got to say, the best way to appreciate Adrian's writing is just dive straight in there. I did this with Children of Time. It took me first 150 pages, dive straight in there, and then it's awesome. This is a task, obviously, which, Kathy, you will be faced with as head of the Newark Book Festival. But, Adrian, share with us this latest scenario, Eyes of the Void. It's out there, the second part in this trilogy, which, in some ways, I think is actually even better, and I never thought I'd say this, than Children of Time. And the third part of Children of Time was released this year as well. I've already put in my pre-order.
Yes, it's a bit of a mad year for me this year.
Well, allowing for that, keeping it sane, let's do a little descriptor of the awesome Eyes of the Wood. And why I'm referring to architects, because these are cosmic beings, perhaps, who effectively, well, you don't want to mess with them, do you?
Yes, so, I mean, there's the limit to what I can say about Eyes of the Void, because, like you say, it's book two. But the series, The Final Architecture, was started with Shards of Earth last year. About 100 years before the book takes place, Earth gets completely destroyed by a moon-sized crystalline thing, which turns up and turns the entire planet and everyone on it into an avant-garde art sculpture for no reason that anyone understands, and then proceeds to pursue people from planet to planet across the galaxy, apparently intending to turn everywhere they live into these bizarre sculptures. There's a big war, which is mostly people running away. A type of sort of surgically adapted expert called an intermediary is developed. They contact the architect, and the architects promptly vanish, just as mysteriously. 50 years on, Idriss Telemier is one of the last of the first generation intermediaries. He is trying to avoid being captured and owned by people because they've become a bit of a commercial commodity when he and his crew of the salvage ship Vulture God discover signs to show that the architects didn't go away, they were just taking a bit of a breather, and now they're back.
A bit like COVID, but that's another line entirely. Huge fan of your work, of course, and somebody who's been singing your praises ever since he used to say, you know, I prefer The Expanse to Star Trek Discovery. Yes, he did say that, and now he's actually produced the most comprehensive history of one of the most famous poems in English literature, providing the first accurate and comprehensive analysis of what William Blake meant by the poem Jerusalem. We, of course, welcome back to the Midweek Drive the awesomely wonderful Professor Jason Whittaker, who passed us by just about an hour ago. Actually, we saw him pass by the studio as though he was en route to a Zoom call. Did he acknowledge us at all? No. You know, Ryan sank his head. We saw, oh, we do. How are you, Jason?
I'm very well, thank you. And you know what I'm like, Alex. Once I'm wrapped up in my own thoughts, I don't even recognise the rest of the world. So,
well, I think it's
very good to be here. And wonderful to see Adrian as well. Because, yes. That was a fairly accurate rendition of our previous conversation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just figured, how do we actually connect William Blake with the Final Architecture series? And I'm thinking, actually, in many ways, Adrian, I mean, Blake would probably have appreciated the notion of unspace. This notion of space and unspace, and the way in which, in particular, Idriss as a character kind of has to come to terms with being able to navigate through unspace. I mean, were there elements there of the Dune navigators that you were channeling, perhaps? Or was that a case of, no, completely different?
I mean, honestly, not consciously, but Dune has cast such a big shadow across the genre, I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Mm. It's a two-hander you're obviously doing on the joys of Friday the 8th of July with Andrew Caldicott at the National Civil War Centre in Appleton Gate for the New York Book Festival. Are you looking forward to it? Adrian.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking to Jason. Yes, I am.
No, Jason yes, may drop in, he may not drop in. It depends whether he's actually focused on William Blake. That's the key thing. Anyway, from your own point of view, are you keenly anticipating this? Because I know Sarah Bullimore is very excited when you said yes.
Yes, no, I'm absolutely delighted to be invited and really looking forward to be there.
Well, hopefully the person who's chairing it will be on a reasonable routine. We've worked with people together before. I think the last time we worked together was actually up at the Linden Books, if memory serves, actually.
Yes.
Yes, which that was just at the start of Children of Time. It's just great stuff. Future of the Cosmos, in which we have cephalopods expanding and arachnids. So arachnids and cephalopods all taking their way down a whole range of things. We're going to talk with William Blake in a few moments, but Adrian, just returning briefly to yourself, in terms of addressing a criticism that the late great Carl Sagan had of the original Star Wars series, why is everybody white and why are they actually running the galaxy? You certainly actually kick that into touch, because the diversity of life forms, the diversity of creatures, the mixture of bionic or cyborg oriented life forms, and indeed peculiar life forms, unusual, unreal life forms, were very much the fore here. Was that something you had in mind when you were creating this galactic panoply and this galactic landscape to introduce your readers to?
I mean, also it is what is interesting to me, and when I'm creating a sort of a science fiction galaxy, I tend towards alien rather than sort of human-like aliens. And I also try and make my human cast as diverse as possible in, you know, along every axis that that we normally work with, just because I do think that in the past has been a major failing of science fiction. Is it has been very white, it has been very male and able and straight and all the other things.
Jason, as we said, I think one of the first times back in the day, back pre-pandemic era, when we can remember that back, I know you were keen to obviously sort of connect again with Adrian. What is it about his writing that appeals to your good self as a William Blake scholar extraordinaire?
So I'll just answer first of all about what appeals about his work. In one sense, it's nothing to do with William Blake. I'm a big fan of kind of hard sci-fi. So I like spaceships. I like traveling to distant planets. I've always been less interested in the kind of the fantasy elements. You know, it has some appeal. But I'm funny you mentioned about the Expanse series, because I after a recommendation from my tattooist of all people, I've actually started reading the Expanse books, because she's madly a big fan of them. So I love that kind of I suppose actually the glib cliche is the Arthur C. Clarke Award going to Adrian completely made sense to me, because it was that big epic vision. I like space operas actually, but I prefer them to be articulate and well written. So in terms of simply enjoying his books, that is the reason why. With regard to Blake's science fiction, what I wanted to actually draw attention to, so this is a plug for a future project. I'm actually just beginning another project, which will be on Blake and science fiction, because actually Blake has been hugely influential on an awful lot of science fiction authors. And we're starting off, the first chapter is called Tiger, Tiger. So Alfred Bester's Tiger, Tiger. Fahrenheit 451, Burning Brights, you know, it just simply references to the time.
And Jason, as you're well aware, one of the first things I connected with you back in the day was, of course, the Charlie X episode of Star Trek, the original series, in which Spock is actually forced to say Tiger, Tiger, Burning Brights in the forests of the night.
Yes, indeed. So, and I think the comment you made actually about the unspace, Blake's poetry, I think Blake is probably... he says, sticking his neck out. It's certainly going to be the argument of my book. Blake is one of the first science fiction authors. Blake creates his own mythology. Blake creates his own cosmology. So he would have called Unspace probably Ulro or things like that. You know, his characters descend into these weird visionary spaces, which actually you don't really encounter again until you get science fiction emerging properly in the 19th century.
Adrian, are you a fan of William Blake? Did you sing Jerusalem? Did you sing your heart out with Jerusalem? Or did you think, don't be silly, that's far too esoteric in my own world?
Blake is one of my favourite artists and poets, and I was lucky enough to catch the Blake exhibition at the Tate a few years ago. He is absolutely a unique voice in multiple fronts of art, and
I think that says it all. Unique voice on multiple fronts of art. If you want more, literally purchase the book Jerusalem, a mere 25 English pounds, which is actually available. Blake Parry and the Fight for Englishness Don't worry, it's not that kind of Englishness, not like Boris Johnson. Jason Whittaker, of course, offers an extensive analysis of Parry's music and the circumstances of the composition of the hymn Jerusalem, and traces the complex social, political, and cultural contexts in which the hymn has been used over 100 years. Yes, in Jamaica. Sorry, Bermuda.
Not the same.
Not the same at all in any way, shape, or form. In Bermuda, were you familiar with Jerusalem? Did you sort of think, well, that's a biblical reference? You know, were you familiar with the hymn? What was the impact in Bermuda?
Yep, Bermuda is very, very religious. So Jerusalem, yeah, definitely know a little something about that.
And William Blake, who's that?
No.
No, okay. Kathy, in the joys of Miami, Florida.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think I've shared before, I was raised Catholic, so definitely know the tune. But I didn't actually discover William Blake until I went to university at Florida State. And that's when my undergrad was in English, and I had more of an opportunity to really go into that. But growing up, I wouldn't have never known, that's for sure. Mm.
Jessica, in North Carolina, cultural capital of so much in the Western world, Jerusalem and William Blake?
You know, I've heard of William Blake, but I've never really looked at his work very much before.
Well, there is an ideal book by, Professor Jason Whittaker that might actually help that. See the plug I'm giving you, Jason? I mean, he's just pushing it left, right, and centre here. It's very good.
Absolutely.
So obviously we need to spread that with go buy both, buy Eyes of the Void and indeed the first Final Architecture trilogy aspect as well, because the third one will be coming out as well. Robin, you've been sitting listening to what's been the discourse now. I think you might have actually encountered Adrian at one of the Sci-Fi Weekend packages that we put together. I know he was...
I do believe that our paths have crossed, yes. And I believe I've done a show before with Jason Whittaker. Mm-hmm. Nice to see both of you again. I have to say, I'm really, really glad that you didn't come up to me with the question about, you know, what did William Blake mean to me as a child growing up as an atheist in Wales, because that's
not really
not
target audience, really. Not target audience. So anyway, any questions you'd like to put to Adrian or Jason?
Yeah, Adrian. I mean, I haven't read the books yet, and the yet I emphasize, because I felt a little bit aggrieved at Alex, which is not unusual for me on these shows, because I felt that he stopped reading too soon. Yeah. And I was actually getting into it even with those few short sentences in the excerpt that he read. I have to ask, any chance of selling the film rights or the TV rights to this? I mean, you know, if they can sell Dune, which I've always thought is turgid nonsense. I mean, sure.
Sacrilege, Robin. Sacrilege. The Bene Gesserit Sisterhood will go for you immediately.
You know what? Sacrilege, you call it. Pest control, I call it. So any chance of you of us seeing an adaptation of this, either in our local multiplex or on, I don't know, Sky Atlantic or Netflix or Prime or Disney Plus?
It's entirely within the gift of any studio that would like to option it. I do think that it is, because it's a space opera and it's very sort of character and action focused, it's eminently filmable if anyone should want to do it.
I thought that what I heard was written very visually, if you get what I mean.
Yes, I mean I do tend to have quite a clear clear picture in my head of specific, especially the faster paced scenes that I'm writing about.
I endeavoured to do it some modicum of justice. Obviously, I wasn't booked to do the audio reading for the actual audio version of this, but there we are. I will confess something, though, Adrian. I decided to actually do something which I don't normally do as a slightly OCD reader, and this time I jumped straight in with Eyes of the Void before I read Shards of Earth. Yeah.
Did it make any sense at all?
Yes, it did, because that was the challenge. I thought, could we actually go straight into number two, the equivalent of Empire Strikes Back, before actually seeing Star Wars? And it does. It worked on that basis, because once you dove into the whole process and you appreciated what was going on, I thought, actually, you can see where things are going. And then when I came to Shards of Earth, I could see it was like a prequel. It was like a prequel to the whole thing, and suddenly things were connecting in all sorts of ways. So I can honestly say, it doesn't matter, Kathy, if you're going to work through the whole thing, you can't say, I've got to read Shards of Earth before Eyes of the Void. No,
Now I can read it however I want to. And honestly, exactly. That's like a luxury. It's something I look forward to in all my reading.
Yeah. Any questions, Kathy, for either Adrian or Jason?
Oh, man, hundreds. But I'm going to keep it light, simple. Adrian, I just wanted to know, what are your plans coming up? You have the Newark Festival coming up now. That's the big plan. But what happens after?
I've got quite a busy summer, actually. I'm in Spain for the Celsius Festival, and I'm at the Guernsey Literature Festival as well. And then things thankfully calm down a bit. One of the two regular big genre conventions at FantasyCon is happening again in autumn sometime. I can't even remember the month now. And in between those, I'll write some books.
A beautiful summer.
I mean, this is the key thing, Adrian, because, I mean, your delivery and rate of production is pretty prodigious. I mean, I think in terms of that, so inevitably, I know one of the questions that would probably be thrown at you at the Tudor Hall event on the 8th of July, Friday, 2 p.m., nice afternoon sequence, will be how do you actually balance that hard science with obviously the fantasy stuff. Have you moved more into hard science fiction now? Has the age of the Adrian Tchaikovsky fantasy area moved to one side, or is there in the Tchaikovsky verse an opportunity that somewhere within the unspace world and so on, you'll have a galactic metaverse of Tchaikovskiness that'll all have these things there, and maybe even have a new Prime Minister of England at the same time?
As that last, we can but hope. For everything else, science fiction is certainly what people, publishers particularly, have been wanting me to do. But I have got a new, for the first time in quite a few years, I've got a new fantasy book on the way. End of the year, we'll see the publication of a book called City of Last Chances, which I had enormous fun writing. It's kind of Les Mis meets Maltese Falcon with a lot of magic.
I'm also in the notion of actually congratulating you for the shortlisting of Children of Time for the Seiun Awards in Japan. It's also been nominated as the best translated long work for the Japanese Seiun Awards. I mean, when you see your work translated into Japanese, is that something which you think, well, I never thought that would be the case?
I was absolutely delighted. I mean, I think that when you get to the point where a book is being nominated for an award in translation, the credit goes absolutely to the translator at that point. And I've had a few, and I always feel that shows someone has really been able to bring it to bring across my work to in the different language and to a different audience.
Now, you've collected
in a particularly special way.
You've collected the Arthur C. Clarke Award, and rightly so. But once again, Adrian, his modesty knows no bounds, because he hasn't mentioned he's also a Hugo Award finalist 2022 for Elder Race. A meeting of science fiction and fantasy, coming face to face with the unknown and fighting mental illness. One I haven't come across as yet, but congratulations first and foremost for getting the Hugo Award, which is all great stuff for that. Well, I say getting it, it'll happen, you know, in a matter of time. How would you define Elder Race in terms of that balance between obviously science fiction and fantasy? And how might it appeal to, say, Jason, who kind of has just said, well, I don't really like the fantasy, but I like the science fiction. What about something where you've melded both together?
So, yes, Elder Race is a story about a princess on a quest to recruit a wizard to fight a demon, as per her family's ancient compacts with said wizard. It's also a story about an anthropologist, second class, who's been watching the local societies over the course of several hundred years, who is not in any way a wizard, but who ends up getting drawn into this quest because, well, effectively he's kind of been abandoned and he's very bad at saying no. And it's the point of the book, really, was to write a story which worked equally as a science fiction novel and as a fantasy novel, because you have the same events being interpreted very differently by these two different characters. Mm. And yes, I mean, it's also depression is something that I suffer from, and a lot of people I know suffer from. It's very common amongst writers, but it's obviously just very common amongst people in general. It's a book that looks a lot at depression and the treatment of depression, because our anthropologist has his own, as well as the outer demons that he's been going to fight, he has his own inner demons to wrestle with on the way.
Jessica, we'll turn to your good self. Any questions you'd like to put into the mix?
I'd like to ask if there is like another sci-fi series that you can think of that really had a huge impact on you, what would it be?
I think, honestly, the science fiction writer who's had the most impact on me is probably Diane Wynne Jones. I read a lot of her work growing up, and I think for that age group, she is a uniquely sort of clever and challenging writer who effectively, her writing gave me permission to think in a lot of different ways and to do a lot of different things in my own writing, because I'd encountered it first in her books.
Particularly impressed with the notion that Lords of Uncreation is coming in 2023. Gives me something to look forward to. And Lord knows, working at the University of Lincoln, I always need something to look forward to. Sorry, Jason, it's just a thought, you know. Sometimes we need to just walk through that whole process, keep that anticipation going. And as I've already said, I've put it in my order already for Children of Memory, which is the third in the Children of Time series. Do you think, Adrian, that might be extended to a quartet of books? I mean, it's obviously a fantastic trilogy, or is it a case of no? At the end of Children of Memory, following, of course, Children of Time and Children of Ruin, that's it. It'll all end there.
I mean, it was going to end with Children of Time, and then it was going to end with Children of Ruin. It basically relies on the idea turning up and having sufficient weight. It's kind of because it's my big series, the one that people might know me most for, I kind of feel if I am going to add to it, it needs to be something genuinely worthy of that.
I still think the way in which you managed to get cephalopods as creatures you could feel sympathy with, and arachnids as well, you know, spiders.
That's a hard one, arachnids.
But he did it. You know, it was my first encounter with the whole thing. He managed to do that. Jason, back to yourself. Any other questions you'd like to put to Adrian, or indeed the rest of the team?
Yes, indeed. For Adrian, it's a great opportunity. I actually wanted to follow on a fairly glib question, because my comment came across as very crass. I actually read loads of fantasy, but I have this fascination towards hard science fiction, which actually doesn't fit with the Blake stuff, because Blake is very much, he would seem to appeal much more to fantasy authors, because it's all
mythology. Are you saying, Jason, that William Blake would not have been a fan of Stephen Baxter?
Probably not, no.
Okay.
But what I kind of wanted to ask, you know, there's these kind of crass comments in left brain, right brain, which I know is nonsense, but do you find yourself having to shift between gears, as it were, when approaching the fantasy versus the science fiction in particular? Are there differences in the preparation that you do, for example?
I mean, there's a bit of a continuum, really. So the Architect series, Shards of Earth, Eyes of the Void, because it's a space opera, it's less concerned with the science than, say, Children of Time was. It really comes down to how much of a left wall have you got that's constraining what can happen in the universe. And the closer you get to the real, you know, to real science, the more that left wall is sort of is apparent, and it's something you have to work with and allow yourself to be limited by. And then the more you move toward the other pole, your own the left wall becomes really just a requirement to maintain consistency rather than a limit on what you can do.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I asked, because another author that I greatly enjoyed was Ian Banks, but actually Ian M. Banks. So I literally have first, you know, I collect everything by Ian M. Banks, and I enjoy reading Ian Banks, but he was very much aware that, you know, for him, it was an opportunity to pursue something he'd always enjoyed, but his writing process was very different when operating, you know, between The Wasp Factory or Consider Phlebas, for example. Yeah. So I was just curious as to what would play. Thank you.
Again, Adrian, I can go back to The Tiger and the Wolf, The Bear and the Serpent, Echoes of the Fall. You know, it's interesting, Kathy, just looking at the list of things here, I think, yeah, like that, read like that, Dogs of War, fantastic sort of personification there. But, you know, certainly with respect to the Shards of Earth, Eyes of the Void, even if you read them in the wrong order, if there is such a thing as the wrong order, it's very worthwhile considering.
No such thing as wrong order.
No, exactly. Just, you know, getting the right coordinations together. Eloise, over to you, good self. Any final questions from yourself?
No, I think everyone's actually covered everything.
That's okay then. That's fantastic. And Robin, your last chance when we've got Jason Whittaker and Adrian Tchaikovsky on the connection to put in another question from yourself from Wales. Not too far away, of course, from where they filmed the series The Prisoner, Port Marion.
Both of you, okay. If you had to choose one influential sci-fi movie that has influenced you, which would it be? Jason first.
Blade Runner.
Good choice. Adrian.
I was going to say Blade Runner is a good call. I'm going to go for Arrival because I'm still kind of, that is a film I'm still thinking of some years after watching it.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly
great choices, both.
Yeah, Denis Villeneuve chance to actually do that, and again, of course, go on to make Dune to Robin's tremendous satisfaction and joy, which is great. Part one and part
two.
He can't
be good every day, can he?
Kathy, last two questions for Adrian, please.
Oh, of course. My first question for you, Adrian, is have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, thank you. I've been delightful to be asked on the show. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you. And my final question is, will you be joining us in the near or distant future?
As well as the Friday the 8th of July, of course, when we'll be joining Adrian, as indeed hopefully will many listeners at the Newark Book Festival. Tickets all available, 7th to the 10th of July. It's an epic scenario. And we've got Adrian Tchaikovsky and Andrew Caldicott. How I can hold these giants of literature together? Well, I've got some strategies in mind. And, you know, I can't reveal too much at this stage, Adrian, but it could be a case of microverse and macroverse. That's all I'm saying. Just a line there. Still.
I'm just impressed how well you plugged that in. Like, you saw it coming. You're like, this is my time. And it was so beautiful. I had to comment.
So over to Jason, then?
Over to Jason, yes. Hello, Jason.
Hello.
First of two questions is, have you
why,
had...
Why aren't you in the studio?
Anyway. Yeah, that is really the first question.
Because I had to get a lift.
And that is a fair answer, and we'll accept it for now. my first question of two is, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
I have indeed, and hopefully next time it will be in the studio.
I mean, we can hope. We're hoping.
I mean, Yaz made it all the way from Bermuda.
Bermuda. You
know, exactly. After years of pandemic.
There was even a triangle involved.
Exactly.
And the final question is, well, I guess kind of answered, will you be joining us in the studio in the near or distant future?
Yes.
Professor Jason Whittaker, author, of course, of Jerusalem, Blake Parry, and The Fight for Englishness, and, of course, award-winning science fiction writer and legal expert as well, the awesome Adrian Tchaikovsky. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And we will see you anon.
Flame. break a heart, dear, nobody else could mend. Whenever you're away from me, wherever you go, you're never far away from me. I want you to know. I only have to close my eyes, dear, and suddenly I'm where you are. You better never stray, 'cause I'll never be far.
See, personally, I'd like to see Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly replaced in the remake by Lily Leonis and Phil Leonis. It could happen. I mean, they could do a Xanadu thing. Phil Leonis is back with us. How are you, Phil? How is California?
Right where you left it.
Splendid.
Alex.
And he's holding up the Spectres poster with Marina Sirtis, one of the early DVDs that Phil actually sent to me. Yes, DVDs back in the day when we were just opening up our broadcasting world from California onwards. I did actually have Leslie Gore's piece from California Nights for Phil, but he wasn't around for that. So I thought he might have been around for the whole program, but it's all right. He's here now and he's in time to listen to Robin Pierce summarize the program. So this, Phil, is what you've lost and missed but can still access via the podcast. Off you go, Robin, and keep it brief.
I told you before, I'm not wearing briefs. Okay, nice to see Yasmin de Graaf back on UK soil. Welcome, Yasmin. I've actually missed doing the Sunday morning shows with you, and it's nice to see you back. Okay, so we had the debut of Pink Flamingos by Pamela Sue Mann, which came across to me as Lena Lovitch meets Kate Bush, a gold-plated, upbeat hit born of the misery and despair of the current times, with vocals by our very own Phil Hurd Wood. Great. Then we had Harry Wallop and Kate Jordan telling us all about days out on a budget when you just can't afford that fuel. And let's face it, who can these days? Apparently the RAF, they need to do a royal flight pass, but that's another thing for another day. Then we went on to Ambier and her single Fear, which to me sounded like Rumours in the style of Stevie Nicks before her voice broke, with a pleasantly easygoing techno backing. Then you did miss a real treat of Adrian Tchaikovsky, sci-fi fantasy author, and Professor Jason Whittaker, who has written a specialist piece about William Blake. And now it's the star of the show, Phil Leonis himself.
Yay, Phil! Go, Phil! Yay!
Go, Phil! Go, Phil! Mm. Go, Phil!
It's interesting that the star of the show would be given the wrong link to join the show, which is what happened.
Well, Phil, if you've noticed, I haven't actually mentioned a most valuable contributor yet, because in the interest of fairness, he dropped my slot in before yours, which would make you out of the running. So
Exactly. Sweet, dude. Exactly.
It also lets the listener know that anything from this point on, if you're recapping all the highlights, anything from this point on just blows. This is padding at this point.
Phil, honestly, we thought you might have joined us for the whole show. That's why I was anticipating that, and I thought, well, maybe it's part two, maybe part three. I actually said do all four links, but it's okay. You know,
realizing that I was going to be joining you this week, late last night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, we had elections in California yesterday, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, I suddenly thought I should know what happened in the vote of confidence. So I looked up, right, your vote of confidence there on Boris Johnson. And the first headline I found was, what does this mean for the future of Boris Johnson? And I just love that as a headline, because I think it's the question I ask myself every day, no matter what I do. What does this bode for the future of Boris Johnson?
It is something which I think the entire Western world contemplates and cogitates on, really, and as indeed does his major fan, Vladimir Zelensky, who is a big Boris fan. And, you know, we wonder that. I mean, Kathy, sure, from your war scenario, what does it mean for the future? BJ.
It just depends. You know, you can consider the American side of things where we are very self-centered and we're like, Boris who? No, I'm joking. Not most Americans know. but I think when it comes to this, especially, I mean, the numbers were quite high. It wasn't extremely different if I remember, it was something like 138. Thank you. 138 had said no. And that's plenty of people.
Over 40%.
Over 40%, which just means you're getting closer and closer. And I think the public already agrees. Just talking to anyone I know, which I'd like to think I speak to a lot of variety of different people here in England, but everyone is pretty much over it. And by over it, they're just kind of wondering.
I guess Donald Trump has been sending some messages of support, because Boris needs as much help from Donald Trump.
Yeah, where is he? I don't know. Maybe in a convention in Florida. Mm. Phil wants something to say. Come on,
well,
Phil.
You know, you mentioned Zelensky, and this is a fascinating thing I've begun to wrestle with, is the fact that Zelensky, of course, was an actor. He came to fame on a sitcom where he played someone becoming president of Ukraine. And
he voiced Olaf in Frozen
as well.
Well, I did not know that, but I'm not going to hold that against him. But the point that I was getting at was, Alex, when I was younger, I remember firsthand how many people would deride President Reagan. And it didn't matter that he had been a governor, that he'd been a longtime political figure. He was written off by a lot of people as being just an actor. And I feel like that many of the people of the political stripes, let's say, that would have been likely to criticize and dismiss Reagan as being just an actor are the same people that now champion Zelensky and probably appreciate how important acting is at times as a leader. The job of embodying something that your people can have faith in. And if they have faith in you and you express faith in them, they will then in turn have faith in themselves. So I find that to be fascinating.
I mean, I agree with you. It's interesting, especially since we think of Reagan now. I mean, anytime I hear Reagan, if I ever hear anyone talking about Reagan, I know that immediately they're going to be like, Reaganomics. of course, there was definitely a lot of things that kind of go into that. But it's also interesting to see that his view at the time being, oh, just an actor, and his view today, even in 2020, over the 2020s, where people will kind of forget that piece of information. So I'm kind of curious as well, when it comes to Zelensky, will that happen over time? Where if we push further far enough, like, will he kind of be forgotten as that and just be thought of as a political figure?
And you know, I don't think it should be forgotten, because again, I think it's an important part in leadership, being able to act the part. I mean, Churchill understood this during the Blitz, right? Playing a figure was so important as a projection screen so that people could project their hopes and their fears. And if, again, you could embody this steadfast, unswerving belief in the people, they would then have a belief in themselves. I remember as probably, I don't know, I was maybe around 12 years old, and America had gone through a period in the 70s where we weren't feeling great about ourselves. And all of a sudden, Reagan, who's newly inaugurated, there's an assassination attempt. Mm-hmm. And a major turning point was when he walked into the hospital on his own power. He gets shot under the arm in the chest, and he walks into the hospital under his own power. Yes, as soon as he was out of view of the cameras, he collapsed, and he darn near died. We know now how terrible it was, but he knew it was critically important that the cameras captured him walking in under his own power, that America was strong again. And it was a turning point moment in kind of the psyche of our nation. And those things are important. And I think if we forget that acting matters and how you perform these roles, we're going to lose sight of some of the things we need in our leaders.
Well, and I agree with you, because as well as acting, I think more importantly, especially from someone of such like a high figure, a politician, someone who's responsible for a lot of the choices that so many people have to go through every day, they need to be well-rounded. And acting is part of that. You know, I mean, that scene is really important when you're mentioning, I mean, and so many moments like that in history happened that were filmed that are just as important to be executed that way for 100 different reasons, you know. But the question is, what's the balance? Because you don't want to, I guess, what's the right word? Overact, I guess, where to the point where someone doesn't want to trust you because they want to know, am I actually seeing a real version of you?
You're listening to What Americans Think of British Culture on Siren Radio, and indeed opened up from the joys of Miami, Florida, to indeed California.
When did Reagan and Zelensky become British culture? That was quite proprietary.
You should know as a former colonial that actually everything is British culture.
Whoa! Did you just say former colonial?
We were the original Brexit, and don't forget.
Jessica, would you like to have any particular inserts in terms of what we've just been hearing from the sensible world of North Carolina? Because sometimes I feel Miami and California, they're extremes.
You know, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like lately I just, keeping up with politics isn't something that I'm super into. I mostly watch BBC News for the accents.
And Richard Fitzwilliams, of course.
Stories. So I don't really know half of what's going on. But, you know, it's interesting to hear everybody else's thoughts. I love hearing what people think about of foreign politics, like when they're not from that country. I value opinions when somebody is kind of just talking aloud about some other country. I think it's very interesting to see another perspective. Maybe just because I know U.S. politics gets discussed a lot. So, you know, hearing somebody bring up British one is interesting.
And let's face it, you've had 4 days of having to listen to Richard Fitzwilliams do lots of royal commentary for international stations, so it's understandable you might be a little bit biased in these kind of things. Don't worry, Richard is back with us tomorrow morning, where he'll be doing a review of the Jubilee.
Woohoo!
That should wrap up at least 5 hours. Anyway, sorry, Richard. He'll be with us doing his magic. We'll have to bait it. Okay, I'm not sorry. But it is National Smile Month, so if it's any month at all, it's National Smile Month, and suitable for Richard this, possibly. No. I won't say it. World Bedwetting Week. Oh, I just said it. Anyway, yes. Any thoughts from yourself on the state of the globe? Or is it a case of, look, I'm from sunny Bermuda. We gave the name to the shorts and the triangle. What's not to love?
I agree. We did. But I will say I am very interested on both Phil's and your role on the
Kathy,
fact that
Kathy's
role.
It's all right, just sitting next to each other. You've already just met. It's okay.
She knew it. It was just stuck for a second.
It was. Their views on leadership, because I think acting should be more common and more talked about than it actually is. When we think about it, it's just so much of a performance in a way. But we all do it. We all do.
And recently you were indeed president of the Signet PR group. So you had
it was
a
all an act, Alex.
I suspected as much, but I didn't want to say. No, it's always very important. A little task that I'm going to give Eloise to actually suss out for this one is, Eloise, would you like our final track to be Pink Flamingos, Pamela Suman and Philip Hardwood, or Thea, by, of course, Ambier. You've got a few moments to actually work on that before we actually come to you and find out exactly what that is, because, Robin, it's time for your most valuable contributor has filled in, has done a typical American thing and snuck in at the end and said, that's it, thank you very much, good night, see you on a B-year, I've done it.
Are you saying that's what we did in World War II? We just snuck in at the end?
World War I, World War II, you know, the thing.
Honestly, I just feel like you're drinking a lot of haterade here, Alex, and Phil and I will not have it.
It's the lack of tea. Don't worry, we'll put that right. Anyway, Robin, over to you.
Okay. Phil almost has. Almost.
Wow. That's all I want.
Almost.
I live in the almost.
Every good comedy needs a foil. You know, there's no Morecambe without Wise. There's no Herman Munster without Grandpa.
There's no Picket Lines without the New York Times.
And today, he had one. I'm giving the award jointly for that excellent 5 minute unrehearsed, goes anywhere talk about acting and political leadership and how they are intrinsically linked. And they didn't even mention Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
We could have.
It goes to Kathy Manso, Phil Linus.
I would just like to thank my grandma for this opportunity to be here today. She specifically said if I won an award for anything that I'd have to call her out. So, Letha, this one's for you.
This is
Granny Manso, it happened.
Quite clearly. Okay.
I don't want to be told which one of us is Herman Munster and which one is Grandpa.
Oh,
I
don't, wow. I was thinking more of a Maverick and Goose situation, but that's fine.
Yeah, Maverick
well,
and Goose.
Well, I've just
possibly
seen the teaser for the new Rob Zombie Munsters movie, and it was on my mind.
And Robin will shortly be going to see Jurassic World Dominion. So there we have it. Well done. Well done, Kathy. Well done, Phil. Yes, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Leonis, please?
Yes. Phil, have you enjoyed your experience with us today?
Yes, I have. And I love that your name evokes such fond musical memories for me.
Yeah, but she's not a member of the plastic population. I'm just saying. That was Yaz and the plastic population. The only way is... actually, it wasn't the only way. That was Doreen, who was the only way is up. Oof. Maybe it was Yaz and the plastic population.
Let her finish the questions, Alex.
Thank you.
And the last question is, will we be seeing you in the near future or distant?
Unless I see you first.
Oh. I like it, I like it.
So tomorrow morning.
Yeah, those days have gone. Those days when Phil would actually be up in the centre of the night to actually deal with phone
links.
That's
not
going to happen. No. He's got other responsibilities these days. Eloise Sheehan, what's your choice, musically speaking? Pink Flamingos or Thea?
I just want to say that I've been bemused for the entire last segment that Phil is sitting in an office I've never seen before. And it's quite dark and he's wearing a really lovely suit. You look as much love as possible. You look like quite a stylish Bond villain tonight, Phil. Mm. And I'm going to go for Flamingos for the last song, Alex.
Good choice. To Kathy Manso, Yaz de Graaf. Have you enjoyed your first studio segment, Yaz?
Yes, I'm glad. I'm really glad I came in.
Mm. Are you around tomorrow morning?
I hope so.
There you are. This is good stuff.
We'll talk after.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it a secret.
Jessica Burtis, William Coles, Eloise Sheehan, Phil Leonis, Harry Wallop, Kat Jordan, Ambier, Hannah O'Brien, Adrian Tchaikovsky. Yeah, you see Hannah again, devastated. She was online. She was expecting to see Phil Leonis. Just as last week, she was expecting to see Phil Leonis when she was in the studio, sitting in the Phil Leonis chair. Nothing.
So Phil and I both missed her? Last week?
Yeah, you did.
Wow, the Americans are really having a hard time here.
Adrian Tchaikovsky, Professor Jason Whittaker, and Robin Pierce. And you, dear listener, keep on keeping on. That's it. Happy trails. Pink Flamingos. I don't think you've heard it as yet, Phil, so you might like to just settle back and appreciate this wondrous experience, as indeed Ed Wellman, a voice from the past, Phil Leonis, who's actually just wandering past the studio, and he's sort of waving at you, Phil, through the whole system. Anyway, he's sitting back. He's ready for Pink Flamingos. Can we all say, get Pink Flamingos? 1, 2, 3.
Get Pink Flamingos!
Keep it perfect. Don't even need to kiss you. get something better. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Let's dance like pink flamingos. I'm the only me, you're the only you. You know me so well. I'm the only me, you're the only you. You know me so well. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Let's dance like pink flamingos do, and I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.